Well, good morning, everybody. I want to give a shout out to our folks in Waukesha in the Muskego campus, the Waterford campus. Have trouble keeping track of all those at times. So if you're watching online today, how many have got a weather report for this week? It's great, isn't it? No snow whatsoever. I mean, woohoo! Like, it's going to be a good week in Wisconsin, right? Hey, work with me a little bit as we get started, okay? How many would agree that trust is an important thing at work? Yes? Okay. If we were to try to quantify it, 1 to 10 scale, the importance of trust at work, how many would say it would be at least 6 moving up to 10? So on the high side, trust at work? Okay, super. Anybody go like, it's important but not that important, 5 or below? All right, doesn't look like we're going to have to try to work to persuade anybody of the importance of trust. We'll take just a little bit of time today to try to either establish a conviction with regards to trust or maybe just deepen the importance of it, but we'll be able to take most of our time and just focus on how do we build the trust factor at work. The talk that we do today, you might think of just as one that you could take to work with you as either a vocational or a work seminar. And I hope that in and of itself is a little bit intriguing, you know, encouraging in this sense. We are never going to exhaust all that the Bible has for us in our lives. I mean, you're going to continue to be able to discover new and fresh that's in it. And the Bible brings to us the most practical, contemporary matters and answers, helps for what it is that we're dealing with in our lives as in today. So, that said, if you have a Bible, I want you to grab it right now. If you didn't bring a Bible with you, if you can find somewhere nearby a Pew Bible, take it and turn with me to the book of Colossians. If you're using the Pew Bible, that'd be page 1832. If you've got a bookmarker of any sort, you know, card, there's a Bible ribbon or anything, put it in this passage. I think you may want to look at it later, but we'll look at it a couple times this morning, so I want to keep that bookmarked in there. We pick it up in verse number 22 that says this: slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. Now, lest we get hung up or tripped up here on the first word of slaves, the word that the Bible uses is doulos, so it can be servants, it can be slaves. We just don't want to confuse what they're referring to then in Jesus' day with what we might associate with slavery, as in slavery of the 1700s or 1800s in America. Now, in either case, the Bible is not pro-slavery, just like it's not pro-divorce or pro-prostitution, but it talks and deals with those matters as well as many others that are the result of the hardness of people's heart, of people that can abuse one another that way. So the Bible, you know, just kind of God speaks right into those matters. In this particular case, the word slave or servant that's here, think of it in this term: one who is under another person. So if you got anybody, you know, over you, you know, any authority over you in your life at work or at school, or one who serves or works for another. So you could write the word workers right there in the margin if you wanted to, and it would be very accurate. This passage also is going to be very helpful, directly applicable if you happen to be in school. Real quick, how many are still in school here? Miss your hands? In school somewhere? Okay, so passage right for you. You could put students right in the margin right there as well. So let's read it with that in mind. Workers, students, obey your earthly masters, bosses, teachers, authority, etc., in everything. And do it not only when their eyes on you, i.e. when they're looking at you or in their presence, to curry favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as reward. It is the Lord Christ that you are serving or that you are working for. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Masters, this could be employers, business owners, leaders, provide for your servants with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. Now, this word that we have from God here, at the very core of it, it's dealing with this trust or trustworthiness factor. If you're looking at the passage here, it is in the heart of the relationships that impact us most in life. Verse 18, 19 talk about husband-wife relationships. 20, 21 talks about parent-child-family relationships that are there. And then moving the passage we just read, 22 on through chapter 4 deal with employer-employee relationships. So the things that affect us most, that's what the Bible is dealing with right here. It is not an understatement in any way to say that it is God's will. Now, those are strong words. Anytime you say, it is God's will for us, then it's one of those like, okay, I better really pay attention to this. And a lot of us are very, very, you know, again, we're always searching for God's will in our life. But it is God's will for each and every one of us to be a trustworthy person at work, or again, if you're a student, to be a trustworthy person in the school situation that you find yourself in. Just how important is this matter of trust at work? Let me just use a couple of analogies right now. Hopefully, we'll be able to carry these with us. Patrick Lencioni would say that trust is foundational to everything you're able to do as a team at work. In his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which, by the way, it is in my top 10 most helpful books I've ever read. So, obviously, highly recommend it. But he says in The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, the number one dysfunction or the number one thing that keeps you from having a functional team far and beyond anything else is this: lack of trust. In other words, if you are going to have a team or work in a team of any type at all, trust is going to be the foundation for that to happen. Now, if you're interested, if you want to know the other four of those dysfunctions you can have in your team, yeah, go buy the book and read it. I mean, you'll like the book that way. Let me go immediately to letter B. Trust affects everything. You should have heard us having the debate last night. Is it affects with an A or isn't it affects with an E? Nobody knows for sure, but we think we got it right up here this time. And if you're going to be able to give us more insight, please just bring it on that way. But whether it's E affects, A affects, it still affects everything at work. I want you to think of trust in this way. Trust at work or trust at school is either a tax or a dividend. How many are familiar with taxes? Oh, okay, so you know about taxes. A tax is something that you what? Yeah, that's exactly right. In taxes, you pay. Most of us would say we do not like taxes in our lives, and more tax is definitely not good. If you do not have trust at work, you pay. You pay every day. You pay in so many ways. A lack of trust, the trust tax, is what drives costs up and drives productivity down. It's what increases politics at work, silos that work there. It brings a disengagement. There is a customer-supplier hostility or this mistrust that's in there that way. A lot of misunderstanding. In other words, you don't get the benefit of the doubt if there's the trust tax or the lack of trust that's taken place. Now, on the other hand, if you have trust, then it becomes, rather than a tax, it's a dividend. A dividend is something that pays you. Dividends, we'd say, are good. Dividends or trust dividends affect everything in a positive way. You know, it makes us more productive, or it just opens up more opportunities. Some of that is because there's more collaboration that takes place, or teamwork, we talked about that, it actually becomes functional that way. There's a loyalty that's there with trust. You have a customer, supplier loyalty that's there. You have people that are just now being more engaged in what's going on, or willing to help another person or give a benefit of the doubt that way. An example of this, of the dividends that trust can pay, I think comes from the 100 best companies to work for. Now, it's interesting to be in the 100 best companies, and it's all done through employee survey this way. The number one factor noted by the employees was trust. This is a place where there is trust. The trust factor was high there, employee to employee, employer to employee, vice versa that way. But as we said, here's the dividend part. Interestingly enough, not only the best companies to work for, but these companies, their earnings averaged 4 times the return of the broader market over a 7-year period. It just pays that way. Another way that I've looked at trust, and this helped me, so I want to just pass it on to you. Maybe visually this will help you as well. Trust is actually the keystone of the trust factor at work. Now, we'll talk about the trust factor. There's a lot of things that make up the trust factor, but trust is the keystone that's there. These happen to be pictures I just took when we were over in Israel a little bit ago, and the thing that intrigued me about these pictures, other than the fact that I knew I was talking about trust and this keystone idea was in my mind, but it was the fact that in every one of these arches, Jesus had gone under them. So Jesus may have, you know, as he looked at these, and believe me, Jesus would have looked at the keystones. Jesus was a carpenter by trade, and in his day, carpenters worked more with stone than they did with wood. So he would look at something like this and go, oh, that's good work. Or if it wasn't, now, this is good work because it's been there since the time of Jesus. 2,000 plus years, and I took a picture of it just a couple of months ago. I mean, it's proved that it's there to stay. There are a lot of other crumbled archways all over the world. And that's because that keystone wasn't where it needed to be, or it wasn't able to hold. Jesus would look at some keystones and go, ooh, Andrew, why don't you go first there? Right? I mean, because you know how guys are. I mean, guys are like, oh, if you can walk under something and jump up and touch it, you're going to, right? It's just built into our DNA. There's some that Jesus is looking at. Let's stay on our feet, guys. We don't, you know, don't touch that one that's up there. Well, let's take it to the work environment right here. We all have a trust factor arch at work. We've said that trust is the keystone, but here's what makes up your trust factor at work. 2 major core competencies. 1 is your core character. That's the who you are. Are you a person of integrity? Are you a person that's known for keeping your word? Are you somebody that can be depended upon that way? I mean, that's the who you are side of it. And there's a lot of different stones that go into that one. On the other side, you have your core competencies. That is how you perform. This is something that's really important for us to note. Both of these make up your trust factor. In other words, at work, you can be a great person, but if you don't do good work, your trust factor is going to be high or low. Yeah, it's going to be low, right? I mean, you may know somebody like that. On the other hand, you may be a person with great competency, smart person, can work the numbers, work the machines, etc. But your character, not dependable, issues that are going on that way. If you got great skills, but not a good person to be around, or you don't have to work with that person, trust factor high or low? Once again, low, right? But if you get these right, if you're working on who you are, doing the best you can be, competency, continuing, you know, your work right here, if you get them both right, how's your trust factor? That's the person that you want to be working with. We use this model here for all of our leaders. In other words, our pastors, we work hard to make sure that they're the people that they need to be. I got the character that's in here, but also the competencies to be able to actually help people and do the tasks that they've been tasked to do. Another example of that I'd say is just from the stage right here, one of the commitments that we make is to maintain this trust factor with what the teachers that we bring before you have and how they get evaluated. They have to be people of character. In other words, they have to be doing their best to walk their talk. Nobody's perfect, you know, you can't get that. But I mean, you've got people that are of character, good character here. But on the other part, you just don't put good people up here on stage and say, yeah, that's fine, you're a good person, go teach. You also have to have the competencies to be able to actually communicate and help people with the Word of God as it's being shared that way. So we look at this whole trust factor, knowing that this is a keystone of bringing everything together and holding all of the pieces in place that way. Hope that's of help to us. Bottom line. Our bottom line this week with regards to trust at work is this, that trust ultimately determines the bottom line at work. And I'll talk just a little bit more about that, but if you deal at all with bottom lines, just want to let that steep for just a little bit right here. And while we're doing that, quick bonus lesson that this passage also brings to us with regard to this matter of trust and work. And that's this. Trustworthiness is the measure by which we are ultimately going to be rewarded or judged by. Here's what we mean by that. In addition to what we've just read here, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse number 10 tells me this, that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Don't think about this as do you get into heaven or not judgment. That's not what this is about. This is for Christians, and Christians are going to stand before Jesus and give an account of how you use the opportunities that this life afforded you. In this case, how you worked at work. It says that each of us will receive what's due for the things done in the body, whether good or bad. Here's the thing about this judgment. It will be fair, and there will be no misunderstandings. At work, you might be able to pull the wool over some people's eyes. With Jesus, don't put much hope in that, because he not only knows what you did, but he knows why it is that you did that. So, thinking about this, trust, reward, what you think about it, I'm going to use a little chart that I put together up here. Your trust factor. With regards to your reward now, think about this life. Reward later, eternity or life to come. If your trust factor is high, you have a high trust factor at work, reward now, yes or no? Probably. I say probably. It's not 100%. Sometimes we do right, but you just don't get that reward. But for the most part, trust factor high at work, there's a reward for that. Trust factor high, reward later. In other words, reward from Jesus in the time to come. Yes or no? Yeah, put it down. For sure. Even though you may not get the reward you deserve now, Jesus said, you will get the reward. And if you're rewarded now, you're still going to be rewarded later. Now, what if our trust factor is low? Either character, competency side that way. If our trust factor is low, you're going to be rewarded now? Yes or no? Probably not. Again, sometimes there's an exception. You know, you get somebody that can skate, but usually not. How about rewarded later? Yes or no? Mark it down. For sure, no. Because Jesus will give you what it is that you deserve for the way that you've done what it is that you've done at work that way. Which means this. Your work is work for God. I just want to let that percolate for a second. My work is work for God. Whatever I do for God because he's going to be the one that ultimately rewards me. Which would mean this, if my work is work for God, that I'm not wasting my life at work. You ever feel that way? I'm just wasting my life at work. People would look at, you know, the position that I hold here and they'd say, well, you're not wasting your life at work because it has, you know, kingdom impact. It's, you know, it's helping other people, but that's not what I have. I learned this truth a while ago. See, when I was working in a hamburger stand, I knew that my work was work for God. And so I wasn't wasting my life when I was working in a hamburger stand. When I was a tool and die maker, I was not wasting my life in tool and die making. When I had the opportunity to work in management in UPS, I wasn't wasting my life being a manager at UPS, and then finally I became a pastor and I was no longer wasting my life. I was never doing that. In fact, in a moment, I want you to say this with me. I am not wasting my life at work. Ready? On three. One, two, three. I am not wasting my life at work. How many are feeling better about your work right now? Like, I'm not wasting my life. In fact, it can have huge kingdom impact whether you're making widgets or helping people to do better, healthcare. I think that'll become more and more apparent as we move on right here. So we know trust for employees, trust for students is important, but it's also important for those of us that are in leadership positions. I really like what Stephen Covey, actually it's the son of Stephen Covey, Seven Habits writer, said. He said, leadership is delivering results in a way that inspires trust. If a leader will think in those terms, you will be a better leader. Now, here's what I want to ask everybody to do. If you grab your worksheet, now some of you are probably working on it right now, but if you're not, it's in your program. Just pull this out right now, and on the back it says, building trust at work, and a scorecard. These are some means in which we can build trust at work, but it's also a tool that we'll use before we leave today. So if you just take this out, if you want to fill the blanks in, great. You don't have to do that, but just kind of keep that where it is that you can look at it. How can we build trust at work? All right, let's listen to a couple of things that God has to say for us. We'll start right back at our text right here. The first way to build trust at work is by giving our best. Again, as a student, it's by doing our best that way. Verse 23 said, whatever you do, fill it in right there. Whatever it is that you do, in fact, let's do this. I'm going to count three, one, two, three, and I want you just to say whatever it is that you do. If you're a student, if you're a doctor, if you're a accountant, whatever it is, you know, but whatever you do. So, one, two, whatever you do, three. That's what it, yep, that's what it's saying right here. Work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. In other words, I'm doing this job as a job for God. There's a trap question coming. I'm not saying when, but I'm going to tell you there's a trap question coming. Let me ask you a question. How many here would honestly say, I would work harder at work if I got paid more? Can I see your hands? How many think that may have been the trap question? If you would work harder at work if you were paid more, it means right now you are what? You're not necessarily giving your best. But if they paid you more, you'd give them more, right? Here's another part of this, and that is that we need to be continuing to be improving, growing. You can give your best today, but your best today is not necessarily your best of tomorrow or a year from now, because the potential you have of development and growing is upon you. We need to continue doing this, whatever it is that we do, in order to accomplish number one. Number two, attitude matters. Again, going back to what Colossians 3 said, servants, obey your earthly masters in everything. I'm in verse 22. Do it not only when their eye is on you to curry their favor. Here it is. But do it with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Sincerity of heart or sincerity of soul, in other words, you do it from who you are. We don't get to control our circumstances. There's a lot of things at work we don't get to control. True? You're thinking of some right now, right? You can't control your circumstance, but you can control your response to the circumstance. You can't control the people around you, but you get to control how you respond to the people around you. Does attitude affect trust? Why don't you think about this? How many find it easy to trust somebody with a bad attitude? There's just something about a bad attitude that causes us to get our guard up, right? Or the way that we'll respond back that way. It doesn't allow this trust to go out. It's one of the reasons why God says, always guard your heart. You're in control of how you respond or your attitude. It is powerful, so use it well. Harness the power of that good attitude. Third way to increase our trust factor at work, keep your commitments. Fastest way that you can destroy or undercut your trust factor is by not keeping your commitments. All right, Jeopardy question. The Jeopardy question is this. Who is it that said in the Bible, simply let your yes be yes and your no be no? And you would say, who is? Yeah, who is? Matthew wrote it, but he was quoting Jesus. Jesus said, when you say yes, then make it yes. If you say no, make it no. Don't make a person put it in writing. I mean, there's some people, if you don't get it in writing, you're just not counting on it, right? The trust isn't there. And we live in that kind of society and even business environment. But think how much better, quicker things could be if somebody said, yes, this is what we're going to do, and you could just take it to the bank. That's when the trust factor is high. I know some of you are tweeters out there. In other words, you use Twitter. So if you're a tweeter, let me give you something to tweet this week. When you make a commitment, you build hope. When you keep a commitment, you build, say it, so true, isn't it? Number four, and this straight out, this point is straight out of the Bible. Speak the truth in love. Now, certainly the Bible tells we need to be truthful people. You can be untruthful by lying to somebody or by misleading them, not giving them all of the facts, letting them go to a conclusion that's not there. How many have ever been either lied to at work or misled at work? Can I see your hands? All right. I think the saying goes something like this, doesn't it? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on... Yeah, I think I said that backwards. Yeah. But a person that's willing to admit it publicly is a person that you can trust. Yeah. Fool me twice, no more trust, right? That's how important it is that we're truthful. But it's also critical that we're truthful in love. Another question I have. How many have ever been abused or beat up with the truth? Can I see your hands? It is a painful experience to go through. When truth becomes abusive, you may need to be corrected. And you can be corrected in a way that it helps you and you're a better person, or you can be corrected with the truth in such a way that it either destroys you or it destroys a relationship, or it totally destroys the trust that you have in a person because of the way that they use the truth. You do not want to be that kind of person. When you have to speak truth, even hard truth, you do it in love. That is, with consideration for the other people around you. Proverbs 12, it's a great verse on both sides of this. The Lord detests lying lips, so don't want anything to do with that. But he delights in people who are trustworthy. That's the kind of person that we want to make sure that we are being at work. Number five, first, listen. Whenever the Bible says take note of this, you know what you should do? I would take note of it, right? Take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Why does James give us that admonition? Because it's like pure wisdom. If you're a person that listens, you are immediately construed as a smart or a wise person. Person says, I don't need to listen, or just jumps right over another person. You don't think of that person as smart, or you don't think of that person as wise. Now, wisdom exudes trust, doesn't it? Wise people, smart people, it's like we just are drawn to putting trust in them. Here's the thing, and again, the more authority that you have at work, if you are the employer, if you're the owner, if you're the manager, if you're the general, the higher your authority that you go, the more power you have, the less you have to listen to people. But the more you need to listen. If your person doesn't have to listen, then you want to write down, you need to listen. And that's where wisdom comes in again. And if you become that person that listens, your trust grows, the trust factor grows there. And again, it just becomes that win-win. And then lastly, number six, practice the golden rule. It means live it out. I'm not sure when this was branded the golden rule. It doesn't say golden rule in the Bible. But this statement of Jesus, in everything therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, is truth, golden truth to live by, isn't it? There are some times that you'll find yourself in a situation that you don't want to be in. When, again, think about this from those that have responsibilities. And you may have to tell a vendor, we can't use you anymore. You know, we're changing vendors. You may have to tell an employee or a group of employees, you don't have a job anymore. You know, this division's closing, or you're being laid off that way. If you find yourself in that position, again, it's a big burden. It's a painful thing. But remember, the person that's going through it is painful, and you want to put yourself in that position. Because even though you've got to tell them something that is going to be crushing, potentially, put yourself in their position. What would it be like? And then share what it is that you have to share in the same way that you would want it shared to you. And when we practice this, you will find in so many ways what goes around comes around. And you're the one that gets to determine that. So with our scorecard in hand right now, here's what I want to challenge you to do this week. Would you take your scorecard and grade yourself? If you're in school, as a student, if you're at work, whatever, if you stay at home, you know, however you do that. 1 to 10 scale. Number one, give your best. So this past week or this past month, 1 to 10, have you given your best? First, listen. 1 to 10, what kind of listener have you been that way? If you would just grade yourself. In evaluating yourself, this is how you can be proactive in building your trust. Unfortunately, you don't get to determine your trust factor with others. Here's what I mean by that. You can work on who you are. In fact, in 2 weeks, we'll take some time. How do you become trustworthy as far as our character goes? Your competencies, you can work on that. But how people view you, you can't control that. So the other thing, if you're able to do this, I've already heard some people talking about they're doing this, they've made more copies of this, give this to somebody you work with and say, hey, you know, we're talking about this trust at work or the trust factor and how important trust at work is. And so here's what we talked about in church. And they're like, you talked about this in church? Really? I'm like, yeah, true. Okay. And they say, would you give me a grade? Now, if you're giving this a person to grade you, it's probably somebody that you what? Yeah, right? I mean, so you're looking for a person that you trust. You've done that because you're not going to give it to a person that doesn't, you know, that you don't trust that way. This trust factor that we carry with us, it can become so important, not just vocationally, but also just in your witness. Do you know your witness at work, and everybody's a witness at work? If people know that you're a Christian, you're a witness at work, either good or bad. Whether you say anything or whether you don't say anything, and people just know it, you're a witness. I'd encourage you, if your trust factor's high, to say some things when it's appropriate there. But either way, your witness is directly correlative to your trust factor. In other words, if your trust factor is high, your witness is good. Your trust factor is low, your witness and even all the good things you could say to people is what? Just not even discounted, but people go the opposite direction of that. Look with me at the bottom line one more time. As we think about trust, it ultimately determines the bottom line, your bottom line at work, in both the short term as well as the long term. Would you join me in this prayer, please? We're thankful for the practicality that you give to us in your word, Father. When we realize that we are not wasting our life at whatever jobs that we have, if we think it's a dead-end job, not much of a future, it's still not a waste of our life because we're doing what it is that we're doing now for you. I pray that that will have its full effect and impact on us. I also pray that you'd give us the ability to evaluate ourselves honestly, that we can grow our trust and our trust factor. So help us, again, with truthfulness here, Holy Spirit, seeing ourselves as we really are, but then in increasing our skills as well. We do this to honor you, Jesus. And if that's your prayer, tell him. We offer our prayer in your name, Lord. And everybody in agreement said, amen. Amen.